You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And tonight, of course, as it's a Thursday, it's the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, accompanied by Nick Kunze from Sunland Private Wealth. And gentlemen, I don't know, it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Dow Jones was trading merrily away at 20,500. And obviously, logic told me that it was going to go down to 15,500 before 25,500. But of course, yesterday evening, it closed above 25,500. So congratulations, you blind bulls. Well done.
You know, Lindsay, I have to tell you something. I'm not a CNBC watcher. I'm mainly Bloomberg's, simply because I think they're more journalistic.
Yes,
and it's dull, but it's solid journalism. But what happened? There was a clip that was sent to me, which must have been circulated amongst everyone, of Andrew Ross Sorkin. You know, two anchors there, and the other was Joe Kernan, having a go at each other. Also, the emotion about the market, that one called it right and the other one called it wrong. And they were going at each other, which was quite embarrassing. I don't know what the consequence of that was, because it couldn't have been more than a day or two ago that this was done. But I have never seen such anger among two people. And I say, for God's sake, you know, what's...
What side was one taking and what side was the other taking? What's the context?
Ross Sorkin, you know, who wrote Too Big to Fail. I mean, I like him. He's a very solid man. In fact, he's one of the journalists who's always at Buffett's presentation and asks questions. But Andrew wrote Too Big to Fail. That was his claim to fame. And he's still a very, you know, he's still a very respected journalist for the New York Times. But he was negative. He was saying this doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And Joe Kernan, who's obviously a Trump supporter, was saying, don't panic, you know, this is all going to pass. I'm trying to put it together. And they would go at each other all the time. And even to this day, Andrew was asking questions and Joe was just goading him to a point where the tempers just flared up. It's on YouTube and that. But I mean, Betty, I think it was one of the women in the back. She was a blonde. She was just sitting in the middle there. You know, both of them, everyone's in lockdown. She was just sitting there not knowing what to do. But the point I'm getting at is that this can be emotional. You know, I mean, this people can be very, very emotional about this whole thing, because it has, despite the fact you called us, we called it blindly. What did you say? We just
the blind bulls. Yes, yes.
Yes. Well, I suppose, you know, along the way we've also been a bit open-eyed and.
No, you're quite right. I mean, it was obvious. As Nick always says, he says, just don't trade your emotions, trade the screen. Mm. What do you say, Nick? You've always been very right on this one.
Yeah. No, sometimes you've got to trade us in front of you, not what you think. You know, we tend to overanalyze things as traders, when clearly a few days ago what was the market doing, and it was going up, and I kept on, I think in some weird way, with all this real-time noise and Twitter and all the rest of it, you get almost a real-time sort of temperature gauge to the market, and I saw it substantially more negative views than positive views, and angry views, as David was saying, with the two anchors. I saw views on Twitter, people saying this is ridiculous. The market's going to zero. This is it. We're heading into the apocalypse. And I just think, the more I read this, the more I think people are just in denial. For now it's going up. I don't know where it's going to be in 12 months' time. No one does. No one has a clue. But if you weigh up what I was seeing in front of me with the negative news, but yet the positive price action, it just told me that the marketplace has got a bias leaning towards the positive news. Mm. Like today is a classic example. I mean, we'll touch on it a little later. I mean, the jobless numbers and the GDP numbers. The GDP numbers indicating that I think the U.S. economy is going deeper into recession doesn't look good. But the only thing the press were concentrating on today was that even though there was a jump in jobless numbers by a couple of million, it wasn't as bad a million as we thought. So the market runs. They're just putting a positive slant on it for now. And as I say, sometimes from a trading point of view, I'm not talking about investing. You just got to, you know, for the moment, the momentum to the upside and wait. You know, either you're on it, you ride it, or you sit back if it doesn't make sense in your way. We've all got choices. You're either in the market, you're out the market. No one's forcing you to do it.
Mm. Okay. There's lots of keep going. Sorry, Lindsay.
No,
you're
going to
go on forever. You better take control.
Yeah, I'm going to take control now. Yeah. Otherwise, you two will be here until 7 o'clock or something. But we've got a jobless claims number that came out today. It was expected to be 2.1 million new people filing for unemployment benefit in the United States. Came in at 2.1 million. I don't understand, David, and maybe you can enlighten myself and Nick, or Nick, you do the opposite. If there's been, say, 38 million in the last 7, 8, 9 weeks, does the figure that comes out today add to the total that we've seen, or do some people get back to work? I don't understand how it works.
Exactly. People did get back to work. So these are new claims, people filing for the first time. But what the number was that the ongoing claims were actually down. So you can see people going back to work. You know, those that might have claimed before, that number was down. I had it in front of me, but it did come down a little more. Sorry, I'm looking for it as I talk to you. But
there was also what they call, like, you do get, like numbers do get adjusted. Mm. So the previous week, there was also a revision of 1.25 million from 2.2, which I think was Massachusetts or somewhere. So it was another million better. So it wasn't, once again, it wasn't bad, but I mean, we're talking about, you know, difference between 1 or 2 million out of 40. It's really a couple of million here or there. I mean, does it make a difference, really? But again, clearly the market leaning towards a more positive than a negative off the back of it.
Okay, that's the other thing. One more thing from the United States of America before we get to South Africa is the Twitter storm has been going on.
Oh, no,
Mr. Trump.
I thought it was a joke. I actually didn't realize he was being serious.
And he wants an executive order,
And CNN has a draft of it, and he's going to sign it into law or whatever he does.
That can't be, though.
It can be. And I don't understand why he's cutting his nose off to spite his face, because what's his life without this thing? As I said to Scott Glow from PSG this morning, this is his life. He sends out 20, 30 tweets a day. Mm. So if he suddenly says, well, I don't like Twitter, what's he going to do with his life? I mean, apart from watch television and eat KFC.
I think Twitter completely, I'm on their side. In other words, he makes a claim. Well, let's see if that's the truth or not. And all they did was give a link so that you could check the number of, you know, the whole storm came against around the mail votes, M-A-I-L, not M-A-L-E.
Yes.
You know, around that, and they denied it. They said, you know, the actual numbers do not prove or do not tie up with what he's saying. And he gets very cross. And I think Trump needs an audience. He needs an audience. He needs to get in front of people and arouse them, you know, to get those like a rah-rah, like a cheerleader. Mm. And his biggest fear is that North Carolina, where the Republican gathering is going to take place
in August,
they might not allow crowds there. And he says, well, then we'll move it, because he fears that if he can't get in front of the audience and get them all aroused and, you know, almost like a populist, it could act against him. So that's him. You know, that's him. He likes to put out false news or fake news or makeup stuff.
Constantly.
And people are questioning him and saying, well, you can't keep doing this. You know, I mean, the Washington Post are continually going at him.
Well, they've got,
you can't do that. You know?
Well, the Washington Post has got a front page, sort of what they call the lie detector, where it's an everyday that they
– the Pinocchio
untruth.
Yeah.
Yeah, the untruth protector. And every day it says how many – untruth Mr. Trump has said on the day, and it's averaging like 5 a day. I mean, this man, let's not beat around the bush. He lies. He lies on average 5 times per day every day.
His pants are
and,
on fire.
And I just wonder if this is just another way. I mean, he's slowly, I don't know if he's going to be losing the elections or not. No one knows. But I mean, he's like leading this fight with Twitter now into the fact that social media companies are now interfering with elections, and he says, he's sending out, he's rallying his troops now to say that this is they can't let these social media companies steal the election. The fake media are stealing it. I mean, this has started because he lies constantly on Twitter. And all they're trying to do is regulate his untruths. As I said, I haven't been reading too much on it.
I must say that
Twitter shares are down about 2.5%. You know, so.
I don't like Trump, as it's well documented, and you can listen to any one of the interviews that I do every single week. You can always hear that I have a vitriolic, not hatred, because I don't really hate anybody, but a dislike for Donald Trump. But when I was looking at the opposition yesterday, i.e. Joe Biden, and Mr. Trump calls him Sleepy Joe Biden, the Democrat, I looked at him and I thought, really, take a tonic, do something, because you are so boring, you are so sleepy. And in fact, Mr. Trump in this case is absolutely right. I mean, it's I can understand why people will not go for the Democrats, because Sleepy Joe is really sleepy and uninspiring, David. I mean, you're a Democrat, obviously.
Yeah, I know. You know, well, he's been in a cave or a basement for the last 4 months. I think they've just taken him out. Well, and he's almost 90. I don't know. He looks 90. I don't know.
You know, they've kind of dusted him off and
he's 76.
Him up and wheeled him out.
He looks like he comes from Madame Tussauds. You know,
he's almost verging on 80, Alzheimer's.
I think, yeah.
No, the way
he's got a bit of senility going on there. I mean, he doesn't look as though he could run the world.
He keeps referring to his wife as his daughter and his sister as his mother, and he keeps confusing people's names. And it's quite embarrassing how much he's.
But hold on, that's generally U.S. politicians, you know. I think sometimes they have trouble finding their own state on a map. So.
Well, isn't that, it sounds like world politics in general. I mean, show me the leader currently. Show me the credible leader.
Bring back Barack, please. I mean, goodness me, he was young and he was erudite and he was wrong with his foreign policy and everything, but he was so much better than the two candidates that we have at the moment. But, okay, let's move on now to South Africa. Old Mutual came out with a voluntary trading update. Yeah, it's down, 5.5%? Nick, you know more about these companies because you are one of them, actually. This is one of your rivals, Old Mutual.
The enemies. Don't say nasty about the enemy. Funny enough, we actually I'm talking about from a investment point of view, we actually quite like Old Mutual. We've been looking at it and saying it's, you know, back in, you know, not so long ago when they had all that with Peter Moyer and all the soap opera and the rest of it, we thought it would be unfairly sold off, and we thought it was quite a good buy at those levels. I didn't think they were that bad, but headline earnings per share, you know, likely be less than 20%, no surprises there. The problem is they gave a quite a bearish outlook, and I think that's what caught people more than anything else. And they were quite vocal with what they thought about, you know, using the word significant pressure with the unemployment numbers, and they sounded overly bearish for a company that we all kind of know the story.
You know what? When you looked at what's it now, Metropolitan Momentum or Momentum Metropolitan, and you understand because they explained it, and I think Old Mutual as well, those policies are sold door to door, knocking on the door, a funeral policy, education policy, a lot of those. And I think one of the problems, I think it applies to Mutual as well, particularly in the Cape, I would imagine, Sanlam maybe as well. You need salesmen. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't do this by social media. You can't do it fintech. I still think a lot of their business is done and at the bottom end of that market, and that's a vulnerable market. I think a lot of warnings in that area. I would also imagine that if you're under pressure, you're going to terminate the product. It's the first thing you do.
Well, I'd almost deem it a bit. Isn't it almost a bit like I wouldn't say a luxury, but it's certainly the first thing people do when they're feeling a little bit squeezed with costs and expenses is cutting back on things like insurance. I mean, that's got to be literally that sort of that grudge purchase that you don't actually want. You're prepared to not have it. Yeah. I think you're right, David. I think they're going to see a lot of cancellations or cutting back in policy.
This is what startled me this morning, David, and you've hit the nail on the head, because if you look at the one of their paragraphs, it says the following. Many of our tied advisors have been unable to sell during the lockdown period due to the partial closure of the branch network and lack of access to customers' homes, work sites, and branches. Yeah. The majority of our branch consultants are unable to work from home, and therefore the necessary closure of the majority of our branch network has slowed loan disbursements and negatively impacted funeral savings and credit life sales. So, as you quite rightly say, go round, have a cup of tea and a ginger nut, and get them to sign on the dotted line.
And you know, funeral, those policies are important. I think they're very important for people to have those kind of policies. But you don't sell them fintech, you know, you don't sell them over your phone or something like that. So it's just the nature of the beast down there. And I think all financial services businesses are going to find strain selling policies and so on.
Capitec Bank Holdings Limited, PSG, unbundling of interest in Capitec came out last night. Share price unchanged on the day, but they're selling 28.11%, I think, Nick, on this one. We know about it, but what's going to happen? What is the upshot of this?
Yeah, I think this was – I mean, this came out last night. It was only a couple of lines. I didn't even bother sort of sending it out because there wasn't much detail on it. But we know – I mean, this is what has been muted for a while. I mean, what is this, the worst-kept secret in the trading community it was, and now we know. So they're going to offload 28.11% of the bank. They said they're going to retain just under 4.3%, something like that. But I think going the way that we've seen the likes of the other holding companies. I mean, obviously the likes of Remgro spring to mind. What they're doing with FNB, and just look at what Mr. Van Dyk's done with Naspers and Prosus that split too. So I think we seem to be in a little bit of a theme here with shareholders trying to, well, sort of old-fashioned shareholding structures, holding companies. I think there's been very little return back to shareholders, and I think there's been a bit of pressure. I think some shareholders and big holders are flexing their muscles and saying it's time to give some money back, guys. You know, we need to sort of realize some value. You haven't bought a new thing. There's been very little acquisitions done by these holding companies. We still pay management fees historically to these holding companies too, and I think that's getting harder to justify. And I think this is almost something they had to do. But it's certainly, I think it's good. I mean, it's, for PSG shareholders, I think it's great. They've been pushing for this for a while. The problem I've got is, you know, with all that money and offloading and all the rest of it, is then what do you buy now? You know, that has been such a major contribution to, if not the majority of contribution to PSG over the last couple of years. And it just seems difficult to wonder where they go to from next, you know. But aren't they also, David, you would know, sorry, Lindsay, aren't they also... Is there some changing in structures, like they're almost forced to do it by sort of the financial board or something?
I think because of their holding has become so big now, they will be judged as being a bank and therefore have to meet the capital requirements.
So there's regulatory reasons why they kind of have to do it too. So, but yeah, that's what we know, and a big nice reaction at PSG today.
You know, Lindsay, there's also a bigger issue around all of this. You know, you're going to hear a lot more of ESG, and we better become familiar with it. Certainly, Nick and myself, as you start to invest on behalf of people,
because environmental, social, and governance is what you're saying there.
Yeah, need one angry client to say, "Why did you buy me this share? Do you not know that this is how they behave?" And I think. The managers that we used to have in the 90s and the 80s and the 90s, aggressively acquiring companies, the old trick, you buy a company with a low PE and you issue shares and automatically your earnings, you get earnings accretion and your share price goes up and so on. The old tricks, and I think people are going to ask questions and they're going to start questioning the governance. You know, what are you there for? Are you there to make money or are you there to build a company? And those old style managers, you know, you got to say to Pit Viljoen Pit Mouton, and say, Pit, what value are you really adding? You know, you're taking huge administrative fees out of this. What are you adding? You know, and you're going to start questioning the conduct. Is this for you to make money, or you genuinely care about your shareholders?
Yeah, and that ESG route, I think, is becoming more. I mean, I was convinced. I got no proof in it. I was convinced at the start of the year that Sasol and Sasol was literally a change in sentiment from a lot of shareholders. Saying, I mean, Sasol, we know, is one of the dirtiest, if not, I think, second to Eskom in South Africa for pollutants. And I think it's becoming more of an issue, which, and I mean, just, I mean, I look at a, look at from us, for example, and I use Sunlum, you know, we're big shareholders, no secret, it's not a fact, we're big shareholders in British American Tobacco, along with a lot of other funds. You know, we like the story and the rest, but a while ago it was put to us by the powers that be saying, you know, at one, at some point you've got to have a sort of a hymn sheet to go back to some shareholder who's going to say to you, why am I invested in tobacco? Why do I own a company that effectively is proven to have lung cancer, for example? This is a sort of an example. I think, David, you're right. I think as ESG is going to become more and more prevalent for all of us as asset managers. We're going to have answers and have to justify why you invest. Wasn't the Norwegian pension fund, I think, last couple of weeks ago, came out and said they are not investing in Sasol, they're not investing in Glencore, and they're selling their holdings in anything that invests.
No, that was the Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is worth $1.2 trillion. They said we're getting out of all our carbon-based investments.
I mean, Lindsay,
Norway's wealth is built on oil.
Yeah, but that's something you can't ignore. I mean, that's a. I mean, talk about speaking where your money is. I mean, that's. You can't ignore that. If they're dumping your shares in one of the largest sovereign wealth funds in the world, you've got to consider it.
You certainly have to. So Barlow World, is that a dirty company? I don't know, but they came out with an operational update today. I think the share price was up around about 2%, David. Logistics company, Barlow World, is geographically diverse. I just can't get excited about it at the moment.
No, they sell a lot of yellow metal, which are Caterpillar. I think they make more money not out of selling Caterpillar, but rather servicing Caterpillar. But nothing's really happened there, you know, since they used to be in their heyday, was a massive business, not only with which kind of rivaled SA Breweries and rivaled the others for their reach across the country. But I think they've undone all of that. In fact, I think there was Barsab. Barlow's SA Brewery at one stage. There's going back history. Gosh. Nick doesn't even know about that one.
Yeah. No.
Still in my diapers. Mate.
There was Barsab.
David Barsab. Are you telling me that Barlow World and South African Breweries were a single entity at one stage?
Well, they had a joint company in which they put quite a number of companies. Remember, SA Brewery went into everything from Sun International to you name it. It owned it. Simply, they couldn't get the money out and therefore had to invest, I was going to say, either horizontally or vertically.
They were in retail at one stage, weren't they, as well? SAP owned something?
Oh, sure. They owned OK Bazaars. Remember, Maya Khan came from, OK Bazaars was a big issue, a wonderful story. And OK Bazaars never really got going. And I always remember at the SA Breweries presentation where one snotty analyst started to question poor old Meyer about OK Bazaars and, was starting to challenge him. And old Meyer just looked at him and said, little, I can't use the expletives that he used, but said, listen, you go man the tools, I'll write the reports, basically saying. He just put him down and said, this is exactly, writing reports is a lot easier than.
What happened to OK Bazaars?
Is
it still trading?
No, it was. It's part of ShopRite.
ShopRite, yes.
I don't know if they still have the brand. Is there still an OK Bazaars?
I think there's one standalone brand. I saw one in Randburg.
This was big in Elof Street. Yo, Elof Street. OK Bazaars was a huge. The Millers and the Cohens and the Millers. Wow, this was in its day.
Okay, you two
like
chumps.
John Hawes and all the other stuff.
We don't like Barlow World, whether it's with OK Bazaars, whether it's with South African breweries, but we don't like it at the moment. It's not to say we don't like it. It's just it's not a compelling argument. Mm-mm. Nick?
No, likewise. I mean, logistics, fleet management. You could argue that, with home deliveries and all the rest of it, it may be something you should look at, but I think the economy needs to get a step up, and we're far from that yet. So, no, I think very unexciting, and I wouldn't rush into it.
Okay, very good. So let's have a look at some of the big movers on the JSE Securities Exchange today. And I've got on my list here, Northern Platinum up 13%, Implats up 10.8%, Vivo up 9.2%, DRD Gold up 9.1%, Nedcore up nearly 9%. Goodness me, that's a noisy share. On the downside, Old Mutual down 5.1%, Equitas down 3.1%, Netcare down 2.5% after the results yesterday, 91 down 2.4%, and Tiger Brands down 2% at R153.63 per share. Nick, any of those ones that catch your eye on anything outside of those 10 that you like or dislike?
I want to mention something which is not sort of on the list, but it might, some of the moves on the list are the course of it. There's a significant weakening of a dollar this week. It's moved almost, the dollar index has moved almost almost 1.5%, the Dixie, from about 100 to lower 98. I mean, it's quite a big move. And then I noticed today, I just got a sort of a headline, one of my sort of my watch list gave me a sort of alert that the euro dollar just broke 110.
Yes, and more as well.
153.
Yeah, and then on the back of that, there's obviously been a lot of sort of talk in the background with China and Hong Kong. And they've sort of been setting that offshore yuan at sort of lower and lower rates. I think in the background, there's quite a bit going on. I think we need to all watch this dollar. You know, off the back of this dollar, that's why we're seeing this nice big moves in the Platt shares and all that. So it seems to be a real, that's the theme for me. So not to digress too much from the sort of leaderboard of the top stock movers, but I think it's just to look at those, like something like Impala Platinum up 11% today. That's got nothing to do with growth or anything like. I think this is a real sort of weak dollar theme starting to emerge.
Very good.
And that we need to keep an eye on.
Let's have a look at those spot prices. Dollar rand is 17.46, British pound against the rand 21.50, euro rand is 19.29, and the euro dollar 110.50 now. It was 108 maybe about 10 trading days ago, and that's a 0.4% fall. It doesn't sound like much, but it's such a massive market between two massive trading blocks, Europe and the United States of America, that it is terribly important. Let's see what it's done to the gold price, because a weaker dollar means usually a stronger gold price in US dollar terms. So the gold price 17.21, which is a decent move to the upside, not spectacular, but it's okay. The platinum price is down 10 though to 8.24, or 1.2%. And palladium, Nick, is what?
I'm going to correct you there, because the real-time platinum price, it obviously just spiked recently, it's actually up 1.5%. It's actually up $12. It's 830.
Okay.
And the palladium price is currently down just a sniff. It's down $17 at the moment at 1920. But the palladium is the one that's been lagging the last few days, actually.
The oil price was down about 3.5% at one stage in the early hours. It's only down 0.25% at the moment, $32.73 for West Texas. And Brent crude is down 0.5% to $34.55. Nick, give us the closing JSE indices and the value traded, please.
Okay, so closing JSE indices on this Thursday. Nice day on the market today. All share is now at 51,389, up almost 900 points, 1.77%. So it really was a good day. Top 40 up also 1.8%, 840 points. And the indices led higher by basic materials up 3.5%. Consumer cyclicals having a good day, 3.4%. And energy shares also 2.3% firm. Sasol a good day, up 5%, leading to that index. Healthcare turn a bit up firmer, financials 1.7%. The only downside, technology shares 0.25% weaker, and utilities are down 2%. Value traded today, get this, 25 billion value traded. That's the biggest I've seen for a while. Yeah.
Just pick up how much Prosus and Naspers made of that. When I looked last, it was about 30%, which is kind of par for the course, but it's always a worry that we rely 30% on those two shares in terms of volume traded, and probably the next five or six make up another 15 to 20% of that.
I saw quite an interesting note. I'm going to both of you when I get a hold of it. It was to do with there's a reweighting or something coming up between Prosus in the index and Naspers. And to do with the gap and the discount that they're trading between the two. Anyway, the conclusion was that the gap seems to be significantly wider to the extent that it looks like they should be sold, i.e. it looks like Prosus and Naspers need to be sold to catch up whatever the gap was. Couldn't remember, obviously, but anyway, it's worth keeping an eye on.
Interesting.
We shall do so. Off air, we were talking about a Frenchman that used to play for Newcastle and Spurs, David Shapiro. His name was David Ginola. Do you remember him?
Ginola.
That's him.
Yeah, he used to advertise Head and Shoulders shampoo, and he was like the first sort of he increased sort of female viewership on the Premiership. I remember back in the day by like 30 or 40% when he played. Quite hysterical.
I never fancied him. Anyway,
good.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and he was accompanied by Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.